Bill Belichick. How you doing today, Bill? Christian Fourier is here. He's disappointed he can't see you in person.
Hey, Coach.
Hey, Christian. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Good. Michael, how's it going?
Oh, going pretty well for us. And wondering about you, how did you spend your bye week? That's the obvious question off the top.
We feel like we can, you know, work on and get better with. We, have a pretty good record. Could be better, but we still feel like our best football is in front of us. So we spent the bye week trying to find ways to improve on, all three phases of the game, and also start to prepare for, obviously Carolina, but, you know, some of the opponents that are coming up that we, you know, are new for us.
You've been through this a number of times in your career. I'm wondering, how do you approach the bye week? Is it one of those things where you say it's better just to get some distance from the team for a while, and then we'll go back and attack the film with fresh eyes? Or do you just jump right in there and say, look, we got to do some intense self-scouting, rigorous self-scouting, as we head into the second half of the season?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a combination of both. You certainly there are some things that we want to look at in a little more detail, but we do self-scouting all the way along. We don't just wait until the bye week comes. So we try to keep tabs on what our tendencies are and what's being successful and what isn't successful, and try to address some of those things along the way. But it gives us a little closer, gives a chance to take a closer look at it. So we'll use it in some of the things that will show up in the self-scout won't necessarily have an application for this game. Some of them will. Some of them will be for other games. So, you've seen several of our opponents that have played different offenses or different defenses against us. And so, some of the things are more specific to a team's particular style than just, 9 weeks worth of stats.
Hey, Coach, what are some of the concerns like with a bye week? It seems like the Pittsburgh game, you guys kind of really got into a rhythm. I know, the team needed the rest with the injuries, and you kind of needed a break. With the guys coming back, actually, when they leave, are you concerned about what their mentality is going to be coming back? Are they going to be fresh? Are they going to be motivated again? Or will there be maybe a hiccup of not being able to, carry over from what they did the previous week?
Well, I think that's always, part of the challenge of coming back, off the bye week is getting your timing and your rhythm back, to a high level. But, the team's gone hard for, over 13 weeks, with the training camp and preseason and then 9 regular season games. So we've been grinding it pretty good. I think rest and just being able to, sleep in a little bit and try to, forget about football. Just, how it is, Christian, the game planning every week of coming in and, having to study for 6 days to get ready for a game and then, forget about it and do it all over again the next week. It's nice to have 1 week where you wake up at the beginning of the week and you're not doing that. So I think there's, that element of it too. But yeah, certainly from a timing and execution standpoint, rebuild that. But I think all the players and coaches were all looking forward to it. We had our break and we had a good chance to recuperate a little bit. And now it's time to go. And I think we'll be ready to go.
Bill, the Carolina Panthers started off 1-3. They don't have a lot of high-profile games. They will against you guys on Monday night, a week from tonight. But I got to tell you, they won 5 straight games, and their defense looks extremely impressive. What do you see about Carolina on film that might surprise some people who aren't used to watching them here in New England?
Yeah, they've really done a good job in the last month or so everywhere. I mean, they've been scoring. They only got 10 against San Francisco. But they've been, in the 30s quite a bit. And, defensively, they have a good front. They take the ball away. They have a lot of turnovers. And, did a good job on, in the red area. And so they're just a good team. And in all phases, they played well in a kicking game. They got an excellent kicker. And, Ginn's a dangerous turn guy. I thought he really hurt San Francisco yesterday in that game. So, they're a solid team. They're well coached. They're fundamentally sound. They don't give you a lot of easy plays. They don't beat themselves. So they make you go out there and earn it. And that's and they've got a bunch of good football players that can make some plays too. So there's nothing easy about playing them. They test you on every play, all the way across the board.
Hey, Coach, so when you guys played the Steelers, you were joking about Nate Solder maybe, you know, taking reps at quarterback to replicate Ben Roethlisberger. So you got Cam Newton, which is a huge test. Any idea who you have on your roster that can replicate his style of play?
Well, I think Ryan will do a good job. He always does. He works hard to, you know, prepare and do things the way that our opponents do them. And I think, you know, we'll see how many, you know, option plays and all. Maybe he won't run all those. But as far as throwing the ball and running the team and trying to get the offense to simulate what we're going to see from Carolina Monday night, I'm sure he'll do a real good job of that like he always does.
You know, Bill, I remember when I first got to town here and I was at one of Bill Parcells' press conferences, he dressed down a reporter. Fortunately, it wasn't me that time, but he dressed down a reporter. The topic was luck and creating luck in football games, and he was very dismissive of that comment, of that idea that it was luck. He said, hey, when I had LT on my side, we were very lucky. You know, it's really making plays. And I bring that up because I look at your team and you have a streak of forcing a turnover. It's the longest active streak in the league. Is that luck? Is that something that you can coach, or is it just instinctive football players making plays? How do you break down a streak like that?
Well, it's probably a little bit of a combination of all three of those. Certainly instinctive football is a big part of it. And, you know, players that have a nose for the ball and have an awareness of where the ball is, not just the man who has the ball, but, you know, how to actually get the ball, you know, off the opponent. That's a big part of it. We definitely coach it. We try to emphasize turnover opportunities and, you know, how to get the ball away from our opponents when those opportunities present themselves. And sometimes, you know, the offense just doesn't take real good care of the ball. Whether it be an errant pass or sloppy ball handling or whatever it is, and provides opportunities. And that's, you know, kind of the way we look at it offensively as well. You know, we don't ever want to give the defense any easy opportunities to turn the ball over. We want to protect it as well as we can. But that being said, you know, occasionally there are plays that the defense makes that are just real good or real instinctive plays that, and cause the ball to be out of our hands. And that's, you know, you do everything you can to prevent them, but at times there are plays that just happen like that. So we try to create those plays. At the same time, we try to take advantage of the opportunities that the offense is perilous. We certainly want to jump all over those.
Are there cases where players will come to you? I mean, I know as a coaching staff, you guys will present the information to your players about what an offense is doing, but are there any instances that you can think of when a player comes to you based on something that he's seen from his film study and bring something to your attention about how to force turnovers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, especially, you know, guys that have played with other players on the team, they might, you know, say, hey, this guy is really a fumbler. He used to fumble a lot in practice, or, you know, we were able to get the ball off him a lot in practice, or, you know, played against this quarterback before, and he'll really, you know, stare down the receivers. You can really, you know, read him and that type of thing. Or sometimes they'll say, well, you know, you're saying this is what it is. It isn't really quite that easy here, but here's why. And so that's, yeah, we definitely have a good give and take on that. I mean, you know, as a coach, you see the game, in one way, and it's accurate to a point, but as a player, you see the game differently because you're out there playing and, some things you can see as a player that a coach can't see, and some things a coach can see things that, you know, a player can't see. And you know, finding that right spot there is, you know, that's the communication between a coach and a player, or a coaching staff and his team, that is important to find that right spot. Because, you know, I respect what players say and what they think, and they come and tell me that they can do something that, you know, I'm usually pretty confident that they can do it. And at the same time, if they say, well, that's going to be really hard, I know it, you know, that's a key we should be able to pick up, but it just doesn't look the same in the game as it does on film. Then, you know, we got to find something that we can do. Then that's right. You know, create something that really isn't realistically there.
You were mic'd up for the Steelers game. We got the edited, we got the G-rated version of everything that was happening. It was fine, but I'm sure there's some good stuff that was left out of it. When you're mic'd up for those games, how much time do you think, are you consciously thinking of being mic'd up? And then how much, at what point does just your natural coaching take over and you say, I've forgotten about the mics, I'm just going to do my thing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Michael. I'd say first answer is I should probably, when I hear those, I should probably think about it more. I think there's probably a time when you are conscious of being mic'd, and then there's other times where you kind of get into the flow of the game or something happens and you're working and you kind of forget about it. But there's definitely a few times where I wish I would have been a little more cognizant of the fact that there was a live mic on, but it is what it is.
Hey, Coach, it's researching some stuff on you, and somebody sent me a great clip of you from an Esquire. It looked like it was a Esquire magazine, but it was a clip on you giving advice, and I want to play it for you real quick, and then just get your reaction to it.
Bill Belichick, age 61. The best advice I've ever received was from my dad. He told me to go into something that I love to do, not for the money. And so I did that in my first job with the Baltimore Colts in the National Football League, paid $25 a week, so I followed his advice.
How far do you think that $25 would get you now?
Well, it didn't get me too far even then because, first of all, they took out taxes, so that trimmed it down to like 21-something. And you know, living in Annapolis or even living in Baltimore and commuting up to Hunt Valley, which is north of Baltimore, I'd say a good chunk of it went to gas. And then there was also, you know, a few times where I had to buy the donuts. You know how that rookie thing goes.
Yep.
So that's kind of like that with coaches too. So it didn't really go very far, but, you know, I wasn't worth very much either. So that was okay. And the experience I got that year was, you know, I should have been paying that really.
Well, it actually factors into what you just said at the end is goes with our coach's question of the week, which is brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. The all-new Mercedes-Benz CLA has arrived. See them on the web at mbusa.com. This week's question is from Jack in Chelsea. Jack wants to know, what steps do you take to make sure hazing doesn't get out of control on your teams? And he's obviously referring to the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin situation in Miami.
Well, I don't think it's really, you know, I've really had that problem with the team. So, you know, I think a lot of it is with the veteran players and, you know, how they handle their teammates in the locker room. But, you know, every once in a while, if you kind of see things going a direction that you don't like, then as a coach, then you kind of step in and have to do something. So there's been a couple of little minor things like that a couple times in the course of my career, but really not too much. I think there's a certain element, and you know, Chris can probably talk more on this. But you know, it's when you're part of a team, there's always something that you sort of need to do to as a rite of passage to be a part of that team. And you know, whatever it is, whether it's to you know get up at the beginning of a meeting and introduce yourself and tell everybody where you're from or what you like or something about your family or, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, there's just things that you need to do to become part of a group and for the group to accept you. And I just consider that part of, you know, part of being the team, part of joining the team. And we've all done it. So I think there's that element. And then obviously there's another part of it that's going too far. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about just, you know, joining a team and following a tradition or doing something that, you know, and helps you join the team and shows that you're, you know, doing what everybody else has done. You know, there's something that's a part of being on a team. So, you know, I think there's some of that, but, you know, crossing the line where it becomes personal and offensive and that, I mean, that's, you know, a whole different story, but I haven't witnessed or been around a lot of that. And as I said, anything that would really approach that, then I would, I would try to step in and, you know, make sure that it wasn't being done in a counterproductive way.
All right, Bill. Appreciate the
time.
You know what I
would just say, too, on the whole Miami situation, you know, I really have a hard time with any kind of judgment on that because, you know, I'm not there. And again, as Christian knows well, too, when you're not in the locker room, you don't know how things are done in that environment, you know, and kind of what's a joke, what's serious, what the interactions are. So I really, you know, think it's hard for any of us who aren't a member of that team to really, you know, pass a judgment on what was said, how it was taken, what was accepted, what wasn't, all that. You know, it's we're all grown men, you know, we're all adults, and it's really about relationships, and if a relationship's not working, then somehow it's up to the people involved in that relationship to either, you know, fix it or resolve it or terminate it, you know, whatever it happens to be. So you know, I know there's a lot of opinions on the whole Miami thing, but I'm not one that has one just because I don't feel like I have enough knowledge or information about the situation to have an intelligent one.
Now, for your teams, is there anything off topic that you say at the beginning of the year, hey, let's not bring up religion, race, whatever it is? Or do you just say, I got some good guys who are grown men on this team. They'll figure out what the boundaries are, and we'll go from there. If we have a problem, we'll address it, but... Is there a need to send out to state the guidelines at the beginning of the season?
Well, I don't know if there's a need to, but I do it. I definitely do it. I state certain guidelines, and as things come up during the year that I think need to be addressed as an entire team, and I'm not saying talking to the players. I'm saying the coaches, myself. You know, we're talking to all of us that, hey, here's how we're going to do things, or here's something that has come up, and here's how we're going to address it, and here's, you know, we're not going to have any more of this, or this is okay, or, you know, in the best interest of the team. Now, a lot of times those conversations also come up with the captains, whether they bring them up first or I bring them up first, and we all talk as captains, and, you know, they're representatives of the players. I can't talk to all 53 guys, but they represent the players, and we'll say, okay, you know, how do we feel about this? How do we feel about that? You know, or I would tell them, look, this is something that's going on that I'm not comfortable with. Here's what I'd like to do. And they might say, well, you know, it's a good idea, or, you know, I don't agree with that. I think, you know, this would be a better way to handle it. So, you know, I'm fortunate. I've had a lot of great captains through my, you know, time here with the Patriots. And those guys have not only are great players and great leaders and workers, but they also have a very good sense of, you know, what's right and what's wrong for the group, for the team, in the locker room. And a lot of times they can see things that are potentially coming over the horizon that it's better to address before they become a problem than, you know, after something happens and then there's hard feelings or, you know, maybe a misinterpretation of something. So, no, I think it's definitely important to try to stay ahead of it. And I certainly bring that up at the beginning of the year and as on an as-needed basis during the course of the year.
All right, Bill, we will talk to you next Tuesday since you guys are playing Monday night in Carolina. Talk to you then.
All right, thanks, Coach.
All right. Yep, sounds good, Christian. Thanks, Michael.
Okay.
Yep, bye.
All